Today's edition of the Derek Hunter Podcast is brought to you by Life Change Tea.
Why go to getthetea.com? Because this important news could change your life. Socrates made a statement saying that all disease starts in the gut. Take care of your gut, and well, the rest speaks for itself. Life Change Tea is a wonderful way to aid in your digestion. Brew it, steep it, drink it, and feel it go to work. We at Life Change Tea have been around for years helping people just like you feel better. Lots of testimonials and lots of happy people. Log on to getthetea.com. That's getthetea.com. Getthetea.com.
All righty, hello again, everyone, and welcome to it. It's the Derek Hunter Podcast for July 29th, 2020. It's a Wednesday, hump day. We are halfway to the weekend. Man, it can't get here soon enough. Got an exciting, action-packed program for you today. These nutballs up on Capitol Hill. There's going to be a lot of audio in this show. I could just run the entire bar testimony and the monologues given. Red, you can tell Democrats are very sincere about their concerns for justice by the way that they're reading staff-prepared remarks. And I can say that because I was one of those staffers who prepared those remarks. But when it was a hearing, it was opening remarks quickly, and then it was getting to questions. Why? Because that's the point of the hearing. You're supposed to hear the witness, hence the word hearing. Democrats have no interest in hearing anything. Reclaiming my time was the most commonly uttered phrase from Democrats. The one phrase that was never uttered by Democrats, I condemn violence. By rioters. Rioting is bad. They never said anything of the sort because they don't care. This is their army. This is their goon squad. These are their brown shirts. You know, the Nazis didn't condemn the brown shirts until the brown shirts became a liability, and then they finally did. Democrats think that they still have an advantage by embracing these brown shirts, so they're just letting it slide because... well, because they're scum. And I mean that in the nicest, no disrespect at all. They're just scum who I wish bad things upon. Anyway, I'm Derek Hunter. I am your host. Welcome to the show. We're going to be joined later in the program by Cooper Lawrence, radio host and author of a new book, Celebritocracy, about the celebrities dabbling in politics. It's something near and dear to my heart, the crossover between politics and pop culture, and it's really becoming evident by watching this hearing that the American people in Democratic pockets around the country are incredibly stupid, and they'll fall for anything. It's just, I don't know who, what did they run against? Who are the people that lost to these idiot Democrats? Did they even bother putting anybody up there? Swear to God. We're going to get to a bunch of the audio, like I said, before we get to the Cooper Lawrence interview. But first, we have, it's Wednesday, and as we do on Wednesdays, we have a little chat over the phone with our sponsors at GetTheTea.com. Okay, joining me on the phone is the proprietor of GetTheTea.com. It's the one and only Ronnie McMullen. Welcome back to the show, Ronnie. I appreciate it.
How you doing, Derek?
I cannot complain, and it wouldn't do any good if I did. But I really have nothing to complain about, thanks to my Life Change Tea. I understand you have something special for us this month. What do you have?
I do. It's important to get our bees. The bees are real important for the nervous system. And, of course, the tea, with all the crud, I always call it the world on fire, with all the crud going on, it's kind of stops your digestion. So the tea, obviously, and we've talked about this many times, it's the digestion gets it moving and the tea that makes you go. So also essential bees, which like a bee complex, does a lot of great things for your nervous system, does a lot for cardiovascular, and, I mean, it's overwhelming. And then I even threw in the package some bee pollen. And they don't even know the end of the bee pollen because it hasn't been studied. The scientists are kind of stopped because it's so powerful and it goes so deep. So I put all these together in a special. It's on the front page. You go to getthetea.com, scroll down, and there it is.
Get your bees at Get the Tea. You can't beat that. And the ads write themselves, Ronnie. And by the way, if you enter promo code Derek at checkout, you get what?
you get free shipping. The free shipping's going to be on my dime, not yours.
There you go. GetTheTea.com. Tons of great products. Throw everything in your cart. Promo code Derek at checkout. Click apply. Free fast shipping. Ronnie McMullen, always a pleasure. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you so much.
Love me, Ronnie McMullen, and GetTheTea.com. Don't forget promo code Derek and to click apply there. All right, let's get into this because we got a lot of audio and not a lot of time. And these people, look, I really want to show these Democrats all the respect that they are due, which is none, because they are piles of corn-filled, nut-encrusted pieces of shit. And I mean that, again, in the nicest possible way. They didn't want to hear from the Attorney General. Why he had to be there, I don't know. Jerry Nadler was in his car and he got into a car accident why wasn't he at work earlier? That's what I don't understand. Does he just waddle into work at 10 o'clock when the hearing starts at 10? But they started at 11, and right from the get-go it was clear that none of them actually wanted to ask a question. None of them wanted to hear an answer from Bill Barr. They simply went straight ahead with whatever the hell they had to say. So who to start with, because each one of them got bitch slapped. Let's start off with the Attorney General talking about the so-called autonomous zone, CHAZ, up in Seattle. And then he goes on to say that why won't Democrats do the simple, basic, decent human thing? And right there is the fatal flaw. They're expecting Democrats to do the decent thing and condemn violence from their own brown shirts, from their own army in the streets, attacking American citizens. Why won't you just say, look, attacking federal courthouses, trying to burn it down is wrong? Not one single Democrat took him up on this offer.
Well, starting with they're dangerous because they are purporting to keep on the outside duly constituted authority of the government. They're also, to me, outrageous because the people who are living now under this autonomous zone haven't selected the government. They've selected the duly authorized government of the city and the state. So it's quite an outrage that people would use force to take over an area. What makes me concerned for the country is this is the first time in my memory that the leaders of one of our great two political parties, the Democratic Party, are not coming out and condemning mob violence and the attack on federal courts. Why can't we just say, you know, the violence against federal courts has to stop? Could we hear something like that?
No Democrats took him up on that offer. They couldn't care less. And if you happen to live near an area where these perma riots are happening, Democrats don't give a damn. If your house burns, if your house gets vandalized, if your car gets destroyed, if you get surrounded, if you get beaten, they don't care. They don't give a damn. You don't exist. It's not as though they're out there cheering it. They pretend you don't exist. You heard Jerry Nadler yesterday saying, well, Antifa's a myth. Well, Antifa's a myth that's beating the shit out of people out there. You know, that might be something worth looking into, Jerry, if people are telling you, and if this, you know, myth is spreading throughout Washington, D.C., why not hold a hearing on this myth so you can dispel this myth? Wouldn't that be interesting? He won't do it because he knows he's lying. He's not fat. He's just full of shit. Then we've got here this is funny. Attorney General Barr was asked whether or not the Congress, especially Democrats, would stand up and defend the U.S. Capitol building should the U.S. Capitol come under attack. Of course, the members of Congress know that the Capitol Police are autonomous and they work and they protect the Capitol building, so you can't even really approach the Capitol building. But if a mob did try to vandalize the Capitol building, would this body rise up? He's asked. And his answer is accurate, hilarious, and sad all simultaneously.
I want to continue just on this, quote, peaceful protest for a second. You made a comment just a second ago on these riots. Talking about the courthouses just down the street, what if they decided, do you think that this body right here would rise up if they decided to go tonight and paint the Capitol building?
This body, I'm not sure.
I think this side would. I'm not sure.
That is funny, accurate, and sad all at the same time, because Democrats wouldn't give a shit. They'd be bringing out the paint. They'd be bringing out the gasoline. They'd be pulling their staff-driven cars up to the front of the Capitol and saying, here, go ahead, siphon some gasoline out of this thing and throw it at that building. I'll show you a window that you can get into and burn this sucker down. If they think they could win, if they think they could get one more vote out of it, they would do it in a heartbeat. But that was a rare instance where Attorney General Barr was allowed to speak. He largely was not allowed to speak. Here is an example of Jabba Nadler. He really could use some get the tea because I think he's full of shit. I think he's probably like a 120-pound guy that's just so full of crap that he doesn't realize it. He won't let the Attorney General answer any questions. The Democrats give 5-minute speeches, accuse him of being this, that, and the other thing. You can hear the punctuation where there are questions in there, but they're questions that are asked not to be answered. They're questions that are asked so that the members of Congress can have their clip shown on MSNBC of them asking this question, not getting an answer, because they know that Barr would destroy them if he were allowed to talk. And Jerry Nadler will not allow Bill Barr to talk.
I don't think we've ever had a hearing where the witness wasn't allowed to respond to points made, questions asked, and attacks made. Not just in this committee, but every committee I've been on. Particularly when you think about the fact we got the Attorney General of the United States here.
Gentleman does not have the time.
I don't want the time. I want the Attorney General to be able to have enough time to respond to accusations and questions asked him, and you guys not cut him off.
What you want is irrelevant.
God, what an asshole. What you want is irrelevant. He doesn't need to respond. We scored our points with our base. That's all we care about. Anything else is completely irrelevant. Resistance is futile. Do not bother trying to do anything. These are the people that your fellow Americans voted for? Was there like a used pile of toilet paper that ran against these people? What do you have to choose between that you go, well, this Democrat, Representative Jayapal, wow, she's really the one for me. My God. It's not just her policies. It's her bug eyes that really get me going. It's her general state of unattractiveness, both physically and mentally, that I gotta have her. Then from my state of Maryland, there's a guy called Jamie Raskin. Jamie Raskin is very, there was a lot of questions up there, and this was hilarious, about, well, you didn't send in federal troops to Michigan when a whole bunch of white supremacists stormed the Capitol building. They weren't white supremacists. They were Michiganders. I love how they were carrying swastikas. Yeah, they were carrying signs with swastikas on them, calling the governor of Michigan, Gretchen Whitmer, Hitler, calling her a Nazi. They weren't out there supporting Nazis. They were opposing Nazis. But that doesn't matter because the American public was misinformed by the media deliberately, and the Democrats know that they can keep lying to the American public because the American media isn't going to call them out. Look it up. The swastikas, they said, this is Gretchen Whitmer. The signs. It was not a whole bunch of Nazis out there. It was small business owners going, you're ruining us, you piece of crap. Let us get back to work. And of course, she wouldn't. They also carried guns. What isn't mentioned by Democrats like Jamie Raskin and pretty much all of them is that it is perfectly legal in Michigan to do that. They also don't mention that nobody got shot. Nobody even had a Mexican standoff, if you're allowed to say Mexican standoff, of people pointing guns at each other. Now, at Antifa, Black Lives Matter things, people are actually getting shot. So it's not like they're just carrying guns. They're misusing them. People have been killed at the Black Lives Matter protests, riots, rallies, whatever the hell you want to call them. Nobody was injured at the anti-lockdown protests. Again, important difference. Also an important difference, nothing was set on fire. Another important difference is they went home when they were done. unlike, again, left-wingers. Now, maybe left-wingers, they realize that nobody wants them at home, which is entirely probable, and I wouldn't blame their family members, but it seems unlikely that they wouldn't have some place to go, but they don't. They stick around. So listen to Jamie Raskin talk about, why didn't you send the troops in there? Because, hey, it was a defined short period of time. It was a few-hour protest, and then they went home. Second, they weren't violent left-wing assholes. They weren't violent assholes at all, regardless of their politics. Jamie Raskin, of course, subscribes to Jerry Curl, if you see his hair, but he also subscribes to the idea that most Nazis do, that speech is violence. That speech is violence. Existing wrong is violence to the left. So when he saw people yelling at the governor and yelling at lawmakers, he saw violence. Yet weirdly, when he looks at what's going on in Portland, in Seattle, in New York, in St. Louis, in Oakland, you name the city, Colorado and Denver, when he looks at that with people actually throwing and shooting things at each other, at police, setting fires, he doesn't see violence. Jay, maybe the activator that he's spraying into his head is impacting his brain. And when you don't have much to start off with, anything that impedes your brain. Look, somebody losing 5 IQ points, if their IQ is like 150, it's not going to be that big of a deal. But if you start off at a base of like 24, you take away 5, that's going to have a big impact. Here is Nadler and Raskin, and this is just one of the, because Barr, not Nadler and Raskin, Barr and Raskin, facing off. And Barr demolishes Raskin by pointing out that this, first of all, it's a Michigan issue. They weren't attacking federal property. They weren't protesting on federal property. They weren't doing anything on federal property. And secondly, it's up to the authorities in Michigan. What did not happen in Michigan at these protests against the lockdown was that nobody was arrested. Now, why was nobody arrested? Because nobody got violent. And nobody broke the law. See, that's the difference between a conservative protest and a fascist protest.
Now, of course, your side lost your motions for emergency injunctions, but you got to spread Trump's message that it was time to call off the stay-at-home orders, the masking and social distancing. Here's what you said on national TV, echoing the claim in April that the cure was worse than the disease. Quote, you can't just keep on feeding the patient chemotherapy and say, well, we're killing the cancer, because we were getting to the point where we're killing the patient. Do you remember saying that?
Yeah.
Yeah, well, what do you mean by that?
Exactly what it says. You have to balance the cure with the danger, which we leave to governors. You know, I know everyone likes everyone likes to lay everything at the feet of the president, but this is a federal republic, and the president respected that. And our response, has been largely run by governors. Now, for someone who claims to be so concerned about executive overreach, I haven't heard anyone talk about just keeping an eye on what the governor's doing.
Mr. Barr, with no vaccine.
And that's all the Department of Justice
is doing. Excuse me, the time is fine.
Especially in the area of religious liberty.
Democrats don't give a shit about religious liberty. Government is their religion. That's it. They want to wield the ultimate power. In government, they can be gods because in their lives, they're worthless little puny failures in existence at everything except government. And then they fail in government, but their idiot voters reward them. Because why? I don't know. I assume there are a lot of brain-damaged people out there. There's just a lot of stupid people in this country. You got 330 million people. There's going to be a lot of dumb ones, and they congregate together and they vote together because they're idiots. Jamie Raskin then goes back at Bill Barr. They're very obsessed and upset over the idea that the protesters would be impeded at all. Remember back on June 1st when President Trump walked over to the Episcopal Church, the historic Episcopal Church across the street from the White House, that the leftist mob tried to burn down? Well, they decided at the White House to expand the perimeter around the White House to encapsulate that church and the historic buildings there, because the night before, the leftist anarchist Democrats had tried to burn it down. So they needed to clear Lafayette Square. It also coincided with they're going to clear the square. The president's going to walk over there for a photo op. No big deal. 90% of what presidents do in public are photo ops. It's only a problem because Donald Trump is doing it. Well, the crowd was told to disperse. They did not disperse. They were launching projectiles at the police because that's what Democrats do. They care more about illegal aliens and criminals than they do about law-abiding taxpayers. And like suckers, law-abiding taxpayers keep voting for them. So then they're very concerned. You cleared out the park. You used this gas. You used the other thing. You did mean stuff. You told somebody that they needed to move and they didn't want to move. These people have a right to be there. No, they don't have a right to be there if it is in a matter of safety. A park is to be cleared. A lawful order from a police officer needs to be obeyed. If not, you are violating the law. Leftists cheer people who violate the law. At the end of this exchange, Jamie Raskin is trying to bring up, you did mean things to my friends, many of my constituents. If only they'd done worse things to him if they're his constituents. But Barr points out, or Raskin goes on to say, well, all the church officials condemned the action. And Barr rightly asks the most important question that exposes all of these morons, including the authorities in the Episcopal Church and in my own Catholic Church, the idiocy of and irrelevancy of their comments.
The effect of the St. John's Episcopal Church would have been overrun.
No, that was on Sunday night, I believe.
Are you aware that the rector of the church, that the Episcopal Archbishop of Washington and the presiding bishop of the Episcopal Church nationally, along with the Catholic bishop of the Archdiocese of Washington, all denounced this police assault on the civil rights and civil liberties of the people?
Did they do that before or after the fire was put out?
Raskin becomes tongue-tied. They do that before or after the... Oh, so they didn't want the crowd cleared, but they didn't mind the crowd being cleared the night before for the fire trucks to come through and put out the fire that these left-wing Nazis set in the church. Huh? That's a little bit weird, don't you think? You should have called ahead and said, don't put out the fire. These people have a First Amendment right to protest, then, Episcopal Church. Or maybe you go back down there and start the fire again, because it was put out with oppression. It was put out with a violation of these sweet, sweet, nourishing mutants' rights. These people are insane. These people are evil. These people need to be defeated. They need to be destroyed. There is no middle ground. They covered a whole bunch of issues there. And before we run out of time, I want to point out another one on mail-in ballots. Democrats are obsessed with... They asked him about Russia. They asked him about everything. They went, what about mail-in ballots? You said that there's a possibility of counterfeit mail-in ballots. And yeah, think about this. This is, again, Bill Barr being far too smart for any of these morons with a D after their name to be able to handle or anticipate how smart he is. Which means nobody on their staff is smart enough to pretend to be Barr in questioning. Even though they wouldn't let him speak, he would chime in with a line here and there, and it was hilarious. And that's when they really started clamping down and trying to talk over him, because they knew that every time he opened his mouth, he was destroying these people. But the idea of mail-in ballots, going strictly mail-in ballots, Democrats desperately want full-blown mail-in balloting, because they can commit all kinds of fraud. For the people who sit there, then clutch their pearls going, we have to worry about foreign influence. We must protect against foreign influence. What if somebody posts an ad on Facebook that makes Democrats look bad or whatever? Barr rightly pointed out in the past that it'd be pretty easy if you were a foreign power wishing the United States ill, of which there are many out there on the globe, and many right here in this country, a good way to go about committing voter fraud or throwing the election into disarray is to print up a whole bunch of fake ballots. You can figure out what they'll put it online. Here's what the ballot's going to look like. Put the ballot online. They'll also put, what the envelope looks like. And guess what you got to do? All you got to do is run a printing press to print up, I don't know, 5 million fake ballots, fill them out, mail them in. You can drop them in the mailbox anywhere in the country. There is no identifying mark. We have a secret ballot in this country, so you can't sign your ballot. You don't have to sign your ballot. You should never be made to sign your ballot. You can you can't put a corresponding number on the ballot for each individual person it was sent to. So it has to be an anonymous ballot. So that means it's rife for fraud. Because you just print up, if you've got the paper, you've got access to the printing, even in this country, if you're a Democrat or a Republican and you work in a printing shop, you could print yourself up 50 different ballots, fill them out, put names on them of people you know who probably won't vote or at least haven't voted yet, and all you really got to do is be the first one in there. Maybe the signatures won't match. Most people don't have signatures, quite frankly, that are all that hard to fake, and you get it in there, and whatever it is, you end up causing a clusterfuck. You end up causing massive, massive problems. That's just one of many, many problems with mail-in balloting. Look at what happened in New York. There's still like 100,000 votes in a primary up there that hasn't been settled yet more than a month after the primary. Why? Because ballots have been ruled invalid. They didn't really know what they were doing. They don't know whether they should count these votes or not. It's a complete mess. In Maryland, they mailed out Spanish language ballots to people who don't speak Spanish, when I heard that, I thought, why the hell are we mailing out Spanish language ballots? In order to become a citizen, which are the only people who are supposed to be able to vote in this country, in order to become a citizen, you have to be proficient in English. Of course, Democrats don't enforce that. They actually discourage that. So you end up with a Spanish language ballot, which is incredibly stupid. No other country in the world that I know, except for maybe Canada, because they have two languages and are torn apart because of it, would do something this stupid. But of course, this is who the Democrats are. Oh, you've got a stupid idea? I'm in. That's Democrats. So listen to Barr demolish this Democrat on the concept of the ease of screwing with a mail-in ballot voting election.
Quote, and you, sir, have repeated this disinformation.
Well, it's not disinformation.
I don't have a question for you yet. Here it comes, though. Last month, you echoed the president's conspiracy theory when you suggested in at least three interviews that, quote, foreign countries could manufacture counterfeit ballots, end quote, to influence the presidential election, correct? You did that in at least three interviews?
Yes.
Okay. But in fact, you have no evidence that foreign countries can successfully swear elections with counterfeit ballots, do you?
No, I don't, but I have common sense.
Okay, well...
These idiots, you know, Russia placing a few thousand dollars worth of ads on Facebook was a giant threat to our democracy. But Iran with a printing press and some stamps. No, that's no big deal. They would never think to do that. Of course they would think to do that. These Democrats are the biggest frauds on the face of the earth. It is disgusting, and it turns my stomach, and how anybody could vote for them, I will never, ever, ever understand. Listen, I got good news for you. The Trump campaign has a special offer just for you. President Trump really wants to give you a signed 2020 Make America Great Again hat. He wants to make sure the lucky winner is one of his top supporters. Be sure to enter soon, because this is an opportunity you don't want to miss. This offer is only going to a select group of supporters, and you're one of them. All you have to do is text Derek, D-E-R-E-K, to 88022 today for your chance to win a signed 2020 Make America Great Again hat and own a piece of history. Again, it's simple. Just Derek, D-E-R-E-K, to 88022 to enter to win this contest and join President Trump in the fight to keep America great for four more years. Paid for by Donald J. Trump for President Incorporated. And God knows the alternative is these morons that you've been hearing up there taking over. Don't let that happen. Okay, we have one more Nadler clip that I'm going to save until after the Cooper Lawrence. It shows how petty JABA really is. But first, we go now to an interview with Cooper Lawrence about her book, her new book. I recommend it. You can get it on Amazon. Celebritocracy. I mispronounce it, but we explain what it is. Here it is. Okay, ladies and gentlemen, we have another special guest. So many interviews lately because everybody's stuck in their house. It's awesome. It makes my job so much easier. We're joined by somebody who's interviewed me many times, but I've never had the opportunity to interview. She's a radio host and an author. She's got a new book, Celebritocracy, The Misguided Agenda of Celebrity Politics in a Postmodern Democracy, which hits close to my heart because it's something I touched on in my book. It's Cooper Lawrence. Welcome to the show, Cooper.
Hi. It's so weird to be on the receiving end of you because usually I'm the one grilling you.
Yeah, well, now I'm going to make it as difficult as possible. Nothing personal. It's just I may never get this chance again, so I'm going to make it as worth my while as humanly possible.
Go for
it. Well, first of all, congratulations on the book. It is one of those things that I think drives most people nuts to one degree or another is just because you're on TV, just because you're famous, just because you're known, you think, oh, my God, this person is they must know what they're talking about because they're on TV. And then you add in celebrity where we have an entire segment of the press who wants to gobble up every single word these people say as if they're a burning bush carving it into a stone tablet. But right. In reality, they're some of the dumbest people on the face of the people always say, Brad Pitt, he seems so smart. Like, because you see him performing words written for him by smart people.
Right.
You wouldn't want him to help with your kidney transplant or anything like that.
Right, but he's such a good example because, you know, after he had done so many movies in the Ninth Ward, he felt sort of like an affinity towards that area of the country, New Orleans. So after Katrina happened, he started this Make It Right Foundation. Do you remember this?
Yeah, wasn't he building houses or something like that?
Yeah, he was building. So he promised 150 houses, of which he delivered 90. But the whole concept is that it was these cradle-to-cradle houses. And cradle-to-cradle is kind of the house equivalent of organic. You know, everything was sustainable. It was all these products and things that were supposed to be, you know, part of the environment, like nature, not hurting anything. But think about, like, an organic apple. Think about how quickly it rots compared to something that's sprayed with pesticides, you know? So yeah. The same thing happened with these houses. They began to rot, and not only were they rotting, but there was all this unknown, I guess it was mold, but it was this weird mold. So all the people who ended up in these houses, not only were the houses literally crumbling under their feet, but they were coming down with these weird medical ailments because of this weird mold that was growing. And NBC News had done this amazing story about this in 2018 where they sued Brad Pitt and Make It Right for untold amounts of money, because not just for housing, but for all the medical costs of these weird things that suddenly happened to them. Make It Right had to shutter its doors. And Brad Pitt put out a statement that said, listen, I promise to help and I certainly will. So the implication is that, you know, he wrote some checks and kept it private and didn't want this publicized.
Well, that'd probably be the better way to go in the first place, right? Just you're not made whole. You don't have any insurance. Here's money to help you help yourself rather than I've got something. You live in this shoebox. It'd be better to build them an adobe mud hut.
Exactly. It's like, I'm sorry, Brad Pitt is not a developer. Why are you going to Brad Pitt for houses?
Well, frankly, if somebody said, we'll give you a free house, I'd give it a look.
Right.
You know, I'd check it out.
I guess
but I would also... Yeah. Do a little bit of research and say, you know, geez, it's really humid here a lot. It rains a lot. We're on the sea, below sea level. Maybe we should take a look at some of the waterproofing that goes on here.
Right.
But no, that seems to be a bridge too far. So Celebritocracy, I think I've gotten it right now.
You did. Good job. You pronounced that well. I appreciate that.
Why? Tell us about the book. Tell us about it.
So this is sort of a different look at celebrity. Most books about celebrity culture either take one side or another, or they talk about like why it's great to be a celebrity. This is all about how celebrities have basically glommed on to activism and politics, and they have done nothing right by doing that. And why we allow it and why we listen to them. And there's a lot of research in this book and a lot of studies about exactly why we think they're experts, why we think they're good at politics, why we would listen to them just because we like them in a movie. And then there's some pretty shocking stories in the book, like, for example, what really happened to the money from Live Aid, which was, at the time, publicized.
That Africans, right? That Bob Geldof saved the world or something.
Well, the money was supposed to go towards famine. That was the whole idea, is that there was a famine in Ethiopia, and he gathered all these amazing musicians. I mean, Live Aid is iconic. They raised $127 million, and every dime of that was taken by the leader of, Meriam was his name, by the leader of Ethiopia at the time, and he bought weaponry with that $127 million, which he used to start a civil war and kill millions of his own people, and we funded that.
But they weren't hungry, right?
Well, no, they weren't. But the thing is, it was a man-made famine. But Bob Geldof is not somebody who does research to find out what's going on in Ethiopia. He's just there to put a concert together.
Every year we hear about the anniversary of Live Aid, when the Freddie Mercury movie was out, like, oh, the Live Aid performance. You hear about Live Aid constantly. You never hear that.
Which is a shame, because it's out there. I mean, Bob Guccione Jr. and his sister Nina are the ones who uncovered this, and they wrote about it extensively in Spin magazine, but I guess nobody cared. I mean, they just felt like it was a feel-good concert. I gave money. I don't want to know that the money went towards murdering people. I want to think that the money went towards saving people, and I'm just going to turn a blind eye.
Is that what we see a lot of? And you have a PhD in psychology? You know about what you speak.
It's
totally different from me just sounding off on it. It's somebody who knows what they're talking about. But is that what we see a lot with these celebrities? Because it seems like every celebrity has a cause or a foundation that I view as mostly just a tax dodge for them. But they're also involved in fundraisers constantly. Do they just sort of whirl in like a tornado, raise money, and move on? They're just disinterested in anything other than the PR. They're not interested in, you know, what happens after the cameras go off.
For some of them, yeah. I mean, there's several reasons why celebrities get involved with causes. For some of them, it's a mea culpa. I mean, my favorite example is Chris Brown. After he was accused and, I guess, eventually arrested for beating Rihanna, he suddenly gave all of his money to domestic abuse and domestic violence causes. You know, did he really care about that? Or was that because it was good for his image? I mean, it's obvious that it was good for his image. You know, he didn't suddenly care about that sort of thing. But then there are others that just, you know, they feel a responsibility because they've made so much money off of making sitcoms or movies or whatever it is they do, that they feel guilty. They feel a social responsibility, but they don't know enough about whatever political cause or activism they're getting involved with. So they just either lend their names, or they write a check, or they ask us to write a check, which is so different, because there was a time that Hollywood was really apolitical. It was really important to keep your mouth shut, because you didn't want people knowing how you felt. It was going to affect your bottom dollar, also the bottom dollar, the bottom line of your the label you were with if you were a musician, or the studio you were with. So you didn't want people not going to see your movies because they knew that you liked somebody, a politician they didn't like. And then if they did stump for a cause, they went to Congress themselves. They never asked us. This is new. They've started asking us to help them with their causes. And it's like, you know what? If you want to help a cause, go ahead and write a check. You have the money. Eliminate the middleman. Why do I have to know about it? Like, why include me? So a lot of it stems from guilt. Some of it stems from and there's a lot of research that shows that there's a certain level of empathy that stars feel towards people that are just like them. So they want to help people like them. You know, it's kind of a complicated why stars get involved. But the bottom line is, if you're going to write a check and get involved, you need to do the research, because the celebrity, trust me, has not.
No kidding. Talk about some of the biggest scams. In my book, I detailed Wyclef Jean's help for Haiti, that we're not really sure where the money went. It didn't seem to make it to Haiti, but not even a scam, but the things that go awry, like Oprah trying to help out Katrina victims. You think Oprah, if anybody knows how to get something done, Oprah, call Oprah. If I need to unclog my toilet, if I had Oprah on speed dial, I might call her.
Right. No, she's another good example. The same thing happened to her that happened to Brad Pitt, where, you know, again, her heart was in the right place, but she's not a developer. So the people that she used to develop the houses on Angel Lane, which is her, what she did to help the Katrina victims, the housing projects that she built, she basically came in, did a big, like, you get a house, you get a house, and then left. And once she was gone, the people that were there had her money, and they took advantage of it. They had the think about it. If they gave you a lot of money and you're a developer, and most developers don't want to use the best products anyway, so you want to save money. So they did that there too. The same thing that happened to the Katrina victims with Brad Pitt happened to the Katrina victims in Houston, where it was shoddy materials, the houses fell apart. It became a real disaster where what intended to be helpful ended up hurting people and making their lives worse, not better.
Is there anybody who does it right?
John Bon Jovi did. Like, if we're still talking about Katrina, he's the only one. And you know why? Because he stayed involved. He oversaw every aspect of it. Even though he didn't build anything, he kept in touch with the builders. What materials are you using? What does it look like now? He went back and saw that they needed more parks. So he built another park. You know, he named it Bon Jovi Boulevard, which is fine if you're going to be responsible for it. But it's the same thing that he's doing at his cafe in New Jersey, where he really is trying to help other people, and it's completely selfless. It's not because he's trying to lend his name and be a hero. It's because he truly has a feel for these people. This is his putting his money where his mouth is, because he's a real person. He doesn't see himself as a celebrity the same way somebody like Brad Pitt or Oprah does.
Why do so many of the American people want to be preached to by celebrities? Why do we look to them? Like, Rob Reiner tweeted. Who cares what Rob Reiner thinks unless it's, you know, he's making When Harry Met Sally Part 2 or something. Why do I get that the Hollywood press and this entertainment press has to report on this. They've got to report on something, and they also need to write suck up pieces in order to get access. Mm-hmm. But we consume it. People magazine is wildly popular, not because it's a great read. There's something else going on in there, in the American psyche. So I'm asking you to put your PhD hat on. Why do we care what celebrities think?
There's three main reasons. And the first one, I'm glad you mentioned People magazine. So if you get the bulk of your information from People magazine and TMZ and places like that, you start to conflate celebrity with news. If that's where your news is coming from, you think the people they're talking about are the newsmakers, and they must know something because they're the ones being talked about. That's the first thing. The second is, we feel like celebrities, because they're so rich, because they're so famous, they have access that we don't have. They must know an expert who said X, Y, and Z. They must know the doctors who told them to not vaccinate or whatever other BS is going on with that. You know, we assume that they know more than we do, but the truth is they're not experts. They don't know anybody we don't know. They're just actors. And
wait a second. You're telling me that Jenny McCarthy is not an expert on vaccines? I don't believe that for a second.
It's so preposterous. Yeah.
But it really is that sort of, it's also a testament to the power of TV. That if you see somebody on TV, you automatically imbue them in your mind with knowledge that cable news feeds into this by calling people, here's Republican strategist, Democratic strategist, jobs that don't exist in real life.
Right.
But you think, well, this person must know what they're talking about. They're on TV. No news organization would put them on if they didn't know what they're talking about. And they've had these jobs. But it's so much of it, what we believe is it a lie? Is it ignorance on behalf of the bookers? You are regular all over cable television. You know these people. Is it laziness? Is it, what is it that causes this phenomenon? Or is it our fault, the public?
And that's the third thing I was going to say. I said there were three. That exactly is the third. It's the fact that our political system and our pop culture system are structured as an arena where money and name recognition are valued. That if you're on television, you must have money, you must have name recognition. So that means you must know something I don't know. And I think a lot of times there's something called, in psychology, there's something called the I'm going to get it wrong because I haven't talked about this in so long, but you just reminded me. Something of intimacy, and I'm forgetting the title, but it's something where, like, oh, the illusion of intimacy. Thank you, brain. So the illusion of intimacy is exactly what happens with our relationship with anybody on television, including especially celebrities, where we have this feeling like we know so much about them. You know, they tweet directly to us and they post and they talk. And if you watch them on Instagram stories, they're talking right to me. So you feel like you actually know them, even though you don't. You just know what they want you to know. But somebody that you now have an intimate relationship with, you're more likely to believe. You're more likely to look to for advice. What product should I buy? That's why Kim Kardashian is doing so well with her Skims line and her makeup and her hair products and all that stuff, because she talks directly to us. She's vulnerable. Look at my hair. It's such a mess, but look what I use, and it really works, you guys. You know, and people go, wow, I love Kim Kardashian. There she is. It worked on her. I want to look like her. And she's talking right to me. So it's that illusion of intimacy that we feel, whether it's politics or whether it's skincare, that, you know, they got us hooked.
They're very similar, both of them.
They really are. I mean, they truly are. Because if you think about it, a celebrity stumping for a candidate, they're not doing anything different than they're doing it. They're telling us to buy a Buick. You know, how is a Buick different than Joe Biden right now? And the truth is,
Buick usually knows where it is.
And every bit of research actually shows that most people, that Gen X and millennials specifically, don't want to be told who to vote for. They just they will do the opposite. Like, if you say to me, this explains why. Look, Hillary Clinton had so much star power behind her. Beyonce, Jay-Z, Kim Kardashian. I mean, pick a celebrity. They were like, go Hillary. So why didn't that help her? Why didn't she win? And the answer is because they were speaking to a generation that doesn't want to be told what to do. And they were going up against a bigger celebrity, Donald Trump, who was his own celebrity.
You know, that the illusion of intimacy that you talked about is weird, because I have experienced both sides of that. I met Adam Carolla on a couple of occasions, and I used to listen to Adam Carolla's podcast every day, and he talks about his life, and I feel like I know the names of his kids and his wife, and I know what they do. And when I'm talking to him in this studio, I had to consciously remind myself not to talk like we went to high school together.
Right.
Because he doesn't know me from he couldn't pick me out of a lineup. And when I've done listener events and stuff, people come up to you and you don't realize how much you share of yourself when you're talking for 3 hours on the radio. And they know things about you and you've never met them before, but they feel like they know you, because realistically they do, because if you're being honest, you're telling your what's going on in your life, but you don't know them at all. So I've been on both sides of it. It's really weird. Is that a relatively new phenomenon, or is that something that's been around a while? Because celebrity always existed since the advent of movies, but it doesn't seem like the celebrity culture, the obsessive celebrity culture, it seems relatively new to me.
That part is relatively new, because it's when celebrities started sharing their lives with us. You know, when there were these, really when television started, and they would do these interviews where they would go to the home of whatever famous Hollywood star, and they'd say, these are our kids, and here's our couch, and this is our living room. You know, and you would think, okay, I've seen you in a movie, and now, oh my God, you've let me into your house. So the beginnings of it started then, and then you had interviews that were a lot more personal later on, like through, like you mentioned, People Magazine or David Letterman, where they really share something special about themselves. And then it sort of became like you couldn't promote a book or a movie unless you revealed something really deep and dark about yourself. Like, I always think about how Roseanne Barr, that she was just a comic and then she was on television and suddenly she's telling us all about how she was abused as a child. And it's like, whoa, that was some leap she made there. But it bonded people to her who experienced the same type of abuse. She became their spokesperson for a lot of that. And it was because she shared this very intimate thing. So as the intimacy became more intimate, as it became, you know, it's one thing to say, this is my living room, and something else to say, this is my soul. So as it became, this is my soul, people felt more bonded to their celebrities and more willing to do whatever the celebrity told them, whether it's vote for this person or buy this lipstick.
You then go in chapter five to talk about pseudo experts. Everybody remembers Tom Cruise, the Reverend Dr. Tom Cruise. It's hard to pinpoint one particular crazy interview, but there's something about him. He hasn't led a normal life since he's finished puberty, so I think that feeds into it. But what is it with these people? And they are taken seriously to a large degree. There are people who are influenced in their psychology, in psychiatry, their belief in that because of what Tom Cruise says. Is there a danger to these celebrity pseudo experts?
Oh, there's a huge danger. And Tom Cruise is a good example because there's people out there in the country, not women, obviously, who never experienced postpartum depression, who knew nothing about it. Because his commentary was a reaction to Brooke Shields coming out and saying that she had postpartum depression and doing this big piece for the New York Times. And he basically came out and said, that doesn't exist. That's not a thing. And people that never knew about postpartum were hearing about it for the first time from Tom Cruise. So they figure, wow, he must really know about this. He's the one talking about this instead of his movie. So it's automatically assumed that he must be an expert in the field. And then right after that, both Brooke Shields and the American Psychological Association had to issue statements that said, hey, listen, this guy's a Scientologist. He thinks vitamins cure everything. So that's not what science shows, and that's not our experience. And because postpartum is one of those things that enough women have experienced and their husbands went through it with them, they knew that what Tom Cruise was saying was kind of BS. But then you look at someone like Gwyneth Paltrow, who is, I mean, in my opinion, she is a snake oil salesman. She is somebody who creates a problem, like you have these toxicities in your life and your products. I do. I thought the FDA was in charge of making sure the things I buy have no toxins in them, you know, but yet she's the one telling us there's toxicity everywhere. And lo and behold, she has the product to save me, you know. So her thing is all about selling products and all about how she can get us to go to her website, which I won't even say, and buy her stuff. So she creates problems that don't exist, and then she has the solution for it. So she's really just the lowest of the low, and she plays on the fears of most of her fan base, I guess you can put it, with these products, are people who have real medical problems. Research has shown this. Real medical problems, and they either are not getting enough of a solution from the medical community, or it's really bad, or they're afraid, or whatever, and they go to her. Because she somehow tells them, if you buy this cream, I can cure your breast cancer.
Is it possible that they're just stupid, though? Because nobody thinks of Gwyneth Paltrow as particularly bright, just given her interviews and what have you. She doesn't come off as particularly bright. She could be, you know, Brian Wilson was under the control of a malicious doctor for decades. Is it possible they just fall into, they got money, they got time on their hands, and who else does? Loser, weirdo, guru types who swindle people out of money and manipulate them. Are they falling prey to that, or are they true believers, or is it both?
I think it's a little bit of both. I mean, there are people who are just so desperate to heal whatever it is going on in their lives that they will turn to. I mean, look, Jenny McCarthy is a better example, like we talked about earlier. There are people whose kids, sadly, I mean, if you're a family and you have a child with autism, that consumes the family. And you want there to be a solution. You want help from somebody. And, you know, even though you might not feel that the science you're being given is enough of a salve for you, she's not just somebody who is going to feed you all kinds of BS. She's told you that her son is cured of autism. So it's like, oh my God, you're the only person who's ever cured autism. Please tell us how. You know, it's like, if that was really the case, it would have made national news, and medical experts would love for there to be a cure. I've heard so many oncologists say this, that if the things that Gwyneth Paltrow are selling would cure cancer, I would love to give that to my patient instead of making them go through chemo. Trust me, we would love to be able to just give them some soybeans and say, eat this, your cancer will go away, rather than put them through, you know, these horrible experiences.
Poisoning their body.
Yeah, exactly.
And,
doctors don't want to do that, you know, but unfortunately they have to go with the Hippocratic Oath and do no harm. And they follow science. So I think there's people out there that are really friggin' stupid that Gwyneth Paltrow, people like Gwyneth Paltrow are playing against their fears and making money off of them. If you got to ask yourself, what's the bottom line? If Gwyneth Paltrow really wanted to help me, she wouldn't charge me money for these things. She would just say, hey, I've made enough money. I'm pretty famous. This is a cure. I want to help cure you.
Yeah, she wouldn't even sell it. She just, here's how to make it, or here's where
exactly.
to get it. Or,
what do you exactly? What you want money for? You want money for a cure? You're kidding.
Then you've got in chapter four something. There's a few things we love more than building someone up, and one of those things that we love more than building someone up is when they fall, when they collapse. And since so many celebrities are wrapped into causes, when they fall, does their cause fall? Is there damage to having been associated with less than savory people, I'll say.
Yeah, and you know, for some organizations it's incredibly sad. I think of Lance Armstrong is a really great example. You know, Livestrong, when Lance Armstrong was at his peak and he was getting every celebrity and every politician on the planet to wear one of those yellow bracelets and donate money, Livestrong was worth about $500 million. And they were using that money to help cancer patients and help cancer victims, and they were doing really great work. I mean, they're still an important organization, but they were so tied to Lance Armstrong that after his titles were pulled from him and after it was found that he was doping and he admitted it, and that whole Oprah interview, to this day, right now, Livestrong still exists, but it's only worth $1.7 million. That's a fraction. But they're still helping people. They still need to help people. There's still cancer victims and cancer families that need their help. They just don't have the money to do it because they hitched their wagon to the wrong star.
Again, that's a testament to celebrity culture and how, you know, we love watching people fall. We celebrate when it's sort of a weird perversion. It's off topic, but it's just a you know, when somebody gets screwed, like, oh, good. Somebody else is suffering. Somebody who seemed to have it so easy. But in your, okay, I ask this of people who write books, Cooper, when you start out to write this, you had an idea of what you're going to write, and you start doing all the research, you start doing the writing. What did you learn that surprised you in the course of researching celebritocracy?
I had written a book in 2009, I want to say, called The Cult of Celebrity. That did pretty well, but it was more of like a soft pedal into celebrity. I interviewed a lot of people, and I learned a lot about the ins and outs of celebrity culture. This is a deeper dive. And as I got deeper into politics and things that are more real, there's a difference between a celebrity saying to you, eat at this restaurant, and a celebrity saying to you, stop using conflict minerals. You know, when I learned about Robin Wright and the fact that she had an influence on Dodd-Frank, of all things, and she was able to get them to include a piece of pork that ended up putting thousands of people in the Congo in serious jeopardy. To this day, some of them never got their jobs back. Their families are starving. And this is all because of someone, Robin Wright, again, heart in the right place, not an expert in third world countries and third world culture. I used to think that a celebrity getting involved with a cause was really about helping that cause. I never considered that they could hurt the cause as well. And that's what this book is. This book is looking at all the celebrities that did all of this major work that ended up with dire consequences. And I think that message needs to get out there because people think if a celebrity is involved with a cause, must be good. But here's story after story of how it wasn't good and it was hurtful and people died as a result. These stories need to, they're out there, but it's never been compilated, put together in one book that people can get the scope of it and see that celebrity culture has this dark side.
You mentioned Brad Pitt sort of did a bit of a mea culpa, but are the mea culpas common, or have they just moved on and pretend that it doesn't, the damage in their wake doesn't exist?
What's so funny about that is at least he came out with a statement and said, I promise to do good and here I will make good. If any of these celebrities decided to make good on the things, on the damage that they had done, it's not publicized. They have, you know, it's a private agreement. It's got non-disclosures written all over it. So they don't want to admit a failure. They don't want to admit these large scale mistakes. So as far as I'm concerned, they all just walked away and went, oops, my bad. Sorry. How many people did I kill? Oopsie. You know, as opposed to, I really did some damage in the DRC, the Congo, a place I don't know anything about. Holy crap, what can I do to make this better? I mean, there's a reason why George Clooney walked away from Darfur. If you remember, he was always talking about Darfur, and it was so important to him. But, gee, I haven't heard him mention that in a really long time. So there's a definite reason for that. So I think that's the thing to look at. You look for the celebrity who has stopped talking about the one thing that they were always talking about and ask yourself why.
So then lastly, let me ask you, for somebody out there who does want to get involved with a charity, donate to a cause, and, you know, the celebrities are all over the place wrapping themselves in these things, what should people look for and look out for if they want to help?
It's not that I think every celebrity cause is garbage. I just think if a celebrity is stumping for a cause, you should ask yourself, why? Is this a tax write-off? Is this a PR stunt? You know, I think about recently Ashton Kutcher, who made wine, and he wanted us to buy his wine, and then that money would go towards all these charities that he vetted. Well, he's worth $250 million, according to Forbes. So why does he need us to give him money? He can just go ahead and donate that money. So it makes me suspicious. It was right around tax season. So you kind of go, oh, I see. This is a tax write-off for you. You want me to pay your taxes. Got it. So I think the most important thing is find something that means something to you and give money, volunteer, do something for charity, do something for an organization that is near and dear to your heart, not your favorite celebrity's heart. And there's a lot of research that shows that volunteerism is actually really good for self-worth. It quells depression. It does so many positive things for your self-worth and self-esteem. I volunteer. My dog is a therapy animal, and we volunteer in hospitals. We volunteer in libraries. We volunteer in schools. I bring them in there, and we do, you know, we go in there. And that's the work that we do, because that means something to me. That type of work is important to me. Going in to see sick people and visit people with my dog, like, you know, kids that are depressed and they smile for the day because they got to play with a dog, you know, that means something to me. But that's my charity. So maybe you have heart disease running in your family and you want to do some work for, you know, a local hospital, or, you know, the American Heart Association. I think you need to find something that is passionate for you, that you have a feeling for.
It's always good advice. The book, Celebritocracy, The Misguided Agenda of Celebrity Politics in a Postmodern Democracy. The author is Cooper Lawrence, PhD. She's not one of those. She's not like Dr. Jill Biden. You don't demand on everybody calling you doctor. Because if they say, is there a doctor in the house? You don't stand up and say, I can help them figure out their problems. I can't stop the bleeding.
No, you know, and the joke about me with my friends, they call it a PhD.
There you go. The book is available now on Amazon, wherever fine books are sold. Cooper, congratulations on the book. Thanks for taking the time today.
Oh, thanks, Derek. Thanks for having me.
Cooper Lawrence there, ladies and gentlemen. The book, Celebritocracy, The Misguided Agenda of Celebrity Politics in a Postmodern Democracy, available now. Go out and, well, stay in and get it. Now, there's some audio I want to play of Jerry Nadler just to show his pettiness and the pettiness of Democrats. And it really is shocking. But first, the Trump campaign has a special offer just for you. President Trump really wants to give you a signed 2020 Make America Great Again hat. How awesome would that be? He wants to make sure the lucky winner is one of his top supporters, so be sure to enter soon because this is an opportunity you do not want to miss. This offer is only going to a select group of supporters, and you're one of them. It's really easy to enter. All you've got to do is text my name, Derek, to 88022 today for your chance to win a signed 2020 Make America Great Again hat and own a piece of history, a hat signed by the President of the United States. Not many people can say they have that. Again, that's D-E-R-E-K to 88022 to enter to win this contest and join President Trump in the fight to keep America great for four more years. Fingers crossed. Let's make this happen. This was paid for by Donald J. Trump for President Incorporated. Okay, after a long period of questioning, if you can call it that, Jerry Nadler was calling on another Democrat to come. At the end, it was more Democrats. There are more Democrats on the committee. And Bill Barr said, can I take a five-minute break? Which, in Washington speak, is code for, I gotta pee. You mind if we can stop for a minute? And Jerry Nadler tells him no. No. Now, Bill Barr doesn't come right out and say, dude, I got to take a leak. Let me go. It's just you'd expect a normal, decent human being to know what in the hell he's talking about. Then again, Jerry Nadler would have to be a normal, decent human being for that to be an issue, and he is not. After some badgering and a reminder, a gentle reminder that the attorney general had to waste an hour sitting around for Jabba to show up to the hearing because of a car accident, then I think it set into Nadler, like, oh, he's got to go pee. And then he finally allows it. But that his instinct was to deny the witness a five-minute break, not a, hey, can I go have dinner and come back in a couple hours, but 5 minutes, tells you everything you need to know about Jerry Nadler. Here is that exchange.
Mr. Chairman, could we take a five-minute break?
Dean is recognized.
Could we take a five-minute break, Mr. Chairman?
No.
That's a common courtesy, Mr.
Dean is recognized.
Chairman, of every witness.
I waited 45 hours for you this morning. I haven't had lunch. I'd like to take a five-minute break.
Mr. Attorney General, we are almost finished. We're going to be finished in a few minutes. We can certainly take a break. But
you're class act.
Okay. Yeah, after this. If you still want one, we'll have a break.
No, he wants a break now.
You want it now?
And you just mentioned rudeness. I think we're seeing it on display. Let's let the Attorney General have a break.
Committee will stand in recess now.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
What a petty, I was going to say little man, but only on the inside. On the inside, he's probably like 17 little men. Jerry Nadler, your chairman, your Democratic chairman of the House Judiciary Committee. Like what I say, they're gross people, ladies and gentlemen. I'm not making that up. That is all the time we have for today. But tomorrow is another day, and there will be, Lord knows, more stupidity and insanity to cover. And we'll get to all of it. You can email me, DerekAllenHunter@gmail.com, the website, patreon.com/DerekHunterPodcast. You can find me in all the social media things. I don't really Instagram, but I think it's under my name. I have an account. I just don't know it. Anyway, thank you for listening. I'll see you tomorrow.
For someone who claims to be so concerned about executive overreach, I haven't heard anyone talk about just keeping an eye on what the governor's doing.